This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Confederacy of Dokes, Toronto Raptors, Scotty B. We the North, baby.
Hey everyone, welcome back. It's the Confederacy of Dunks. It's a basketball podcast. You're listening to it. We're here on Raptors Republic, sponsored by FanDuel. Get into a duel with fans. I'm your host, Andy Hall. That's the FanDuel new slogan, I guess. I don't know.
So they just repeat the words of their name?
Yeah, yeah.
They just flip it?
They're really like promoting like medieval style duels now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you own sports bet at all? Have you ever been tempted to sports bet?
I have. I'm often tempted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not a betting person, but there's a lot of times when I'm like, oh, I wonder if anyone knows about this thing that's happening in this, like the storyline, like so-and-so is injured or whatever. And like the lines haven't changed. And then I'm like, no, they know everything.
They know, everything.
They know everything. They've accounted for everything. Don't bother. And then I see it, like a friend of mine will post something on socials about like how they won this crazy amount of money because, you know, he bet three things on the Raptors happening. And it's like my parlays. I don't know what any of those words mean.
We should have a representative from FanDuel HQ.
I would love that.
Come in and give us an ABCs of NBA sports betting through the lens of the Raptors. I feel like that would be beneficial to us. I'm not going to do it. I still can't.
Yeah. What about you? Do you bet on sports?
No, I have like almost no interest in it, and yeah. It has completely overtaken sports media, a business I used to work very extensively in, it's wild to me. Like watching, so I was watching the Raptors game yesterday. The highlights that they're showing from around the league during the game, the line was as big as the score. When they were showing you like this is how it turned out. So I had to like you have to search in the graphic for what the score even was because the plus 700 and the minus 250 is as big and is like even bigger than the score. And so it's very confusing. But I'm not, I just can't get into it. I don't care.
But we do care about FanDuel.
I think you should care. I think anyone listening to this should care. But yes. I will continue to probably not, to probably the detriment of my own media career.
I certainly,
the wind is blowing a certain way, and I'm certainly saying, I think we should go a different way, everyone.
not great, not huge. Mistake, some are saying. But yeah. It's a lot of people, you know, it adds to their fun. You know, they start, you know, when you care about a random Wednesday night, you know, weirdo game, you know, Spurs, you know, Heat, you're like, well, you put a throw a bet on that. And all of a sudden you got yourself a very fun game to watch, right?
No, I totally buy in. Like, you know, I was joking before when the show started when I was like, we doing some Oscars chat here? but no, like I do, I print out a pool. Just to, like me and my wife did it. We just do it for ourselves. We print it out. It makes the whole show way more enjoyable. Once you have like picks and you have predictions, I totally get it. I fully understand the interest in sports betting. I just, not for me.
You messaged me after the, you messaged a bunch of all of our friends on the Oscars after the Oscars. And you were like, I got like 14 right in my Oscar pool. Anybody else do it? And everyone was like, 16.
Nobody did it. Yeah,
I got 16. Yeah, no one did Oscar pools this year. I was like, yeah, man, I don't know. I've seen like two of these movies. I can't.
It doesn't matter. Like, I didn't see the animated short, but I picked it correctly.
Okay. I mean, great. So you picked one, you rolled the dice on one of five and got it right.
Yeah, you got to roll the dice on some of them, you know? I think it's...
you got to roll the dice on a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It actually, I think it's a lot easier than it... than it used to be, because they've sort of like blended some cat. We're doing full on ass Oscars chat.
Wait, I'm right at the top. I know. No, let's go. Let's save it. At least let's save it. Because the Raptors exist and we are following the Raptors and we have been watching them over the last week. Certainly. And it's been a weird week. I mean, obviously we're coming off of all these injuries. The team is looking, depleted, but not, you know, defeated, I'd say. Right. I mean, let's start with that Portland game. Chris Boucher absolutely just willing the team into overtime in that game, as we saw. Mm-hmm. Really, some real like gutsy stuff coming out, and then a major injury happening to our boy Boucher, which is devastating. I only say devastating because before that game, we weren't seeing much of Chris Boucher at all. We were like, does he still play for the team? Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, we were like, he can play like that. It's too bad we can't have him going forward with all these other injuries. But yeah, then of course, the Raps get into overtime and then just nothing. It was rough.
Yeah, it's the classic like feast or famine with the offense a little bit. And like, you know, to speak to Chris Boucher, like, you know, if he can play like that, we all know he can play like that. He often comes in and is a spark of energy. I don't exactly know why he was pinned so hard to the bench under Darko's system, but it's such bad timing that he, and I'm not laughing because you know, it's just it's insane timing that all of a sudden he comes back, spurs the team to an overtime, because I came on this podcast about a month ago and I said the only victories from here on out are moral victories, and that was a moral victory. Chris Boucher spurring the team to an overtime appearance against an equally bad team. So that timing super unideal, and you know, it's just like it's the lost promise of the season where it's like, oh, could we see how Chris Boucher type fits within this offense? Oh, okay, great. Now he's getting some run and he's gone. It's just we're not getting to see the full team participate together, something I lamented last week, I believe. And it's tough. It really, for the people who think that the season should be 65 games, we are exactly at 65 games. And I do feel like if the season ended today, I'd be like, I'm excited for next year, but I can wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, so many teams around the league right now experiencing this crazy injury bug. It's nuts. I feel like we must have seen something like this before, but it feels like we haven't seen this many, like, premier players be out at the same time. It feels crazy. I bet you, though, if you look back, we've had similar things happen. But at any rate, yeah, bit of a disappointing ending there in Portland. And then Denver, you know, we're in Denver there last night. And, like, I was typing to our group chat just being like, our entire starting roster is out, right? Because I think earlier in the day...
RJ played.
Yeah, RJ did play. I was going to say earlier in the day, it looked like RJ was still going to be out, and then they said he was going to play. So, you know, that didn't quite happen, but RJ played and effectively. And yeah, this team was like just handling the starting lineup of the Denver Nuggets for a while there. Mm-hmm. We started to obviously lose it, and obviously we did lose the game, but I think that's one where you look at it and you go, yeah, the outcome didn't work out. It probably never was going to work out. I mean, obviously this is the champions here. We're talking like arguably best team in the league, depending on what you think. And I'd say they are the best team in the league. Anyways, hot take. But we were beating them by 21 at one point and looking like could we duke this out? And then, you know, the All-Stars become the All-Stars and it happens, right? And the bench, you know, we get beat a little bit by their bench, which is unfortunate, but hey, I think there's a ton of positives to take away from this game, right? I think a lot of people looked like they were playing out of their shoes, man. Like there was a lot of Jontay Porter stood out to me, being able to come in and like play against Jokic, like playing pretty solid D. And I know Jokic had a night where I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but it's like no one's ever done that stat line before. Like it was like this.
Oh, one of those.
Which I know you love.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when it's like, oh, nobody's done this in yellow shoes.
Exactly. It was one of those very cherry picked things. But still, despite that, you still, if you look at that whole game, you see like Jokic would have even done more there. And obviously, it's Jokic. It's impossible to stop the guy. So, what more could you ask from somebody? I think let's sort of break it down. I like Jonte. Was there anybody who stood out to you in this game at all?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of great, really great games. Jonte is just like a really interesting prospect because he can, had he not suffered an injury for as long as he did, he probably would be more highly touted than he is right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really great to see him get some run and hopefully, potentially become a pretty decent reserve player, I think. Mm-hmm. Kelly Olynyk, activated absolute Canadian beast mode.
Yes, big last time. Night. Yeah.
Really carried us there for stretches of the second and into the third. He was looking really great. And then just like a great performance from RJ. It was like the team didn't have a ton of options. We didn't have a ton of scoring options last night. We didn't have like a ton going on offense. So it was nice to see RJ sort of like become the de facto number one and put the team on his back. And, there are a couple classic RJ drives to nowhere. where it's just like the defenders collapse and it's just he is nowhere. But for the most part he was I thought he was excellent last night. There was no point in that game last night where I thought that the Raptors were going to win.
Right. Exactly. It was just crazy though.
It was a classic like Denver is not up for this game, but that doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point isn't the win and loss at this point in the season. The point is that we've got a lot of like energetic guys who are fun to watch right now because they're all trying to make a name or change a narrative about themselves. And when the team plays hard, I think that that's really exciting to watch. This team has not always played hard. At the beginning of the season, before all of the trades, there were nights where it was just like nobody is playing all that hard on this team. Watching this team play hard, I find it infinitely more watchable than our, more talented team that we were looking at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. You mentioned Kelly, do beast mode. Like he seemed to be all over the court. Like he seemed to be everywhere doing everything, which you'd love to see from the big veteran.
33 years old.
33 years old, the big veteran. I thought Grady looked pretty cool at some points. Mm-hmm. Obviously we're seeing just him come along nicely. And these are the types of games we talked about last week where we're talking about that individual, development and everything. And RJ, like to me, he was just fearless. He just looked fearless in this game. And when you are when you're driving and you've got Nikola Jokic in front of you, to keep going is fearless, right? Like you're just going to get rejected. And he executed on a lot of those plays. And then of course, sometimes you're fearless and you end up in a hole, and you're just in trouble. So like that's going to happen. I don't think that's that bad, truly. Like, especially when, the team around you is also depleted and, you feel like there's a lot more pressure on you to do the scoring. So yeah.
I really just loved watching Jokic last night because like I don't watch a ton of Nuggets games. They don't work their way into my schedule that often.
I tried, but I don't have league pass, so I couldn't.
Yeah. And they're on late at night. I mean, that's a nighttime game. Yeah. And we got kids, man. We got kids to get up early in the morning. Can't be doing this. But no, Jokic is so unathletic and so good. Like it really reminded me of, Andy and I have this mutual friend, Glenn McCauley. He told us a story once, and this story reminded me of Nikola Jokic. He had two cousins and they were playing a video game called Dance Dance Revolution. Oh. So there you put for Dance Dance Revolution, you're supposed to put this big mat down on the ground and then step on the arrows in time with the music on the screen.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't do that. They would sit in recliners and then they had broom poles and they would just tap.
No.
No.
You're close. You're close. The point of your story still stands, but I got to correct this one thing. The broom poles weren't, they didn't sit and use the poles to do it. They used the poles as balancing mechanisms. I was there once when they did it. I was at their cousin's house when they did it. So they would, it's the same thing though. Like they weren't like jumping and doing all the crazy dance moves, and they were using the poles to, so they could balance, so they could just step on everything instead of like doing the dancing.
Oh, well, Jesus Christ, Andy, you're supposed to be like a fucking improviser. Like, you just yes and it, and we could have moved on.
That's true.
Nobody
I don't
knows
know. I'm also a journalist here on this podcast. Oh, I must respect the integrity of the show.
There's literally nothing to talk about. I'm literally setting up something that's just a point to make.
I think the point stands, though. You're talking about someone being unathletic but really good at it. Well, those guys were really good at it, but they weren't doing it the way you're supposed to. They were doing it the laziest possible way. Still.
Isn't it funnier my way?
I don't know. I don't think it sounds real, though. Either way.
I told that story that way, and it gets big laughs.
Well, it's not real, so you might as well just have said anything.
Okay, why don't you talk for a bit?
It's going to be hard. Yeah, I remember when I first saw him play Jokic, right? I'd like obviously heard about him a lot already, and like played as him in video games before, and then when I finally got to actually see him play on TV, like in watching an actual game, I was like, yeah, I was shocked. I was like, this big lug is the best player in the NBA. Like, this is wild. What is this? And but yeah, just watching him move, it's like maybe I can use a better analogy, one that's actually one that actually exists instead of making one up here. he's like a whale moving through the water. Right, there's no grace to him. He's a big lug, and the movements are all weird. But he gets there, and it's everything is somehow still smooth. You know, every single movement is still somehow weird and smooth, but also looks janky and awkward. And I respect a guy who's like that. You know, that's you don't come across that very often. And obviously, we don't come across Nikola Jokic's very often. How's that? Oh, what's happening? Anyways, so yeah, the Raptors, you know, I think there's some good stuff to take out of this. You know, we're looking at a pretty tough rest of the season here, but hey, you know what? If games like that happen, I mean, it was an entertaining game at least, you know. It was fun to watch the reserves and the bench just go off, right? So that was cool. Did you see that there are a lot of typos on Kobe's statue?
I did see this. The typos are wrong right underneath the same word where it's spelled right. And it's like, what is going on? So like one of the words is like one of the stats or something. I can't remember exactly which one it is. But it's spelled right in the line above and it's spelled wrong in the line below. So yeah there's the Calderon error. There are Calderson. These other two. Yeah, Calderson. There are four total.
Yeah, four
spelling mistakes in a very important statue honoring Kobe Bryant, and it's like you have to get that right.
You have to get that right. If you're the company that made that, because it's just on the base, right? The statue itself is metal, so the base is this marble, and it's got it etched into it. And if you're that etching company or whatever, you're toast. Right?
Yeah.
It's over. You blew the biggest contract you've ever had, and everyone it's so big it's in the media, and now there's no way they go to the same people. Like the Lakers organization is hiring a new person to do this.
No, they shouldn't have had a child make the statue. they had a teenager. They hired a group of teenagers to come in and do this, and they didn't have spell check on the old marble. So they got it wrong.
Now, here's the other option, okay? Is it the fault of this company that printed it out, right? Did the Lakers just go, hey, on the base of the thing, here's a little, like put the box score and then, like, whatever blurb is on this website? Or did they give them it? Were they like, here, put this on it? And then they were like, okay, we'll just put whatever you say. And then the stuff the Lakers gave them, you know, it's like that thing on the internet when the that video of the mom who like got the family portrait printed out on like this huge thing, but it was just the thumbnail, so it's so small and it says all the other stuff around it, like she saved the wrong picture, you know.
Wow.
And she's like, and the daughter's laughing so hard and she's like, you, this is your fault, this is what you sent them. And the mom's like, I did not send them this. And it's like, for sure you did. Is that what we're dealing with, right? Because I think it's, I wouldn't put it, I don't think it's impossible that this is actually the Lakers' fault. That being said, there needs to be a quality check. We got to have a quality check. Right?
Listen, can we just have a quality check in general? Can we just, yeah. I understand that it's granite and you don't get the little red line underneath it. But like, you got to look at it before it goes out. I don't think Genie Bus is sitting there, mistyping the stuff, but, I don't know whose fault it is, but like, this is it's very silly.
Okay. Well, all right. Calderson is being underlined by my Microsoft Word right now, but so is Calderon. So what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
We can't spell check it anyway, right? Either way. Okay. What else is happening in the NBA? Did you see that during a Pistons game, a fan interacted with GM Troy Weaver and basically told him he's terrible at his job. And you're brutal, and then the Weaver gets so mad that he's like I'll whip your ass or something. He tells him he's gonna beat him up, and then he gets the guy kicked out, and the guy's there like, what did I do? I was just yelling at the GM. It's like, well, here's the thing, man, you yelled at the GM, like, mm-hmm. First of all, like, don't act surprised because you're getting kicked out. Big massive controversy, everyone mad that Troy Weaver kicked this guy out. But I don't know, man, that's part of the privilege of being the GM. You get to kick out whoever you want, right?
I think it's a tough look. You can't kick out the fans. Oh, if you're the GM, sure, you have to have a thicker skin than this. You just have to deal with it. Listen, is he mired in one of the worst losing streaks of amount of losing seasons of all time? Probably. Is he very stressed out? Probably.
Yeah.
But, like, first of all, this can't be the first time that he's heard this. The Pistons have been dog shit for a long time.
The Pistons are 70 and 229 since he's been the GM. That's bad.
It's very bad.
Bad? It sounds like it.
It sounds like it. I don't know about the inner workings of the Detroit Pistons front office. How does this man still have a job? And is the price to pay that you still have the job is that you have to have some fans yell at you once in a while.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that a GM is ever above being yelled at by fans. If you, you know, work at a grocery store and you might get yelled at.
Yes.
There's every single type of job where you are in a front facing industry, you might get yelled at. And this guy probably gets paid the most to be yelled at in person. So certainly, I think it's totally fine for you to yell at the GM and tell them that they're doing a terrible job when it's the Pistons and objectively they are doing a terrible job.
Yeah, I got to agree. I think you got to be able to live with it. You got to be able to live with fans yelling at you. The guy was right, 100%. But the look of incredulity on the guy being like, "Well, I didn't do anything." It's like you can't yell at the GM and not think you're going to get kicked out. I agree that's a bad look and he shouldn't have kicked the guy out. But like, if I insult, you know, the king in his castle, I'm going to get beheaded. You know what I mean? I just don't do that.
But he's not the king, and it's not a castle. Yes,
it's the king, and that's
the palace of Auburn Hills. Do they still do that? It's a palace.
It's a palace. Yeah, yeah.
No, I think it's called, what is it, Little Caesars Arena or something?
Probably something like that. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
the Illich family.
An old palace. I don't know. I think it's fine. I think that we should allow it. I think that there should be. Let's take this. Royal analogy even further. I think there should be a court, and I think the king should have to hold court. So the GM sits down and has to hold court with all of the fans at the end of every season, and they can just like sit there,
Colangelo,
and, like Clint, and just tell him what he fucked up, tell him how bad it is, or conversely, tell him how great. I think that there should be some sort of public accountability. I think it's just healthy. It's just healthy to get all this stuff out. It's healthy for the GM. It's healthy for the fans. Everyone can release this vitriol and this tension. And then they can say, hey, it's 60% off in the gift shop right now. And everyone goes, let's go.
Oh, yeah. Or just like release the t-shirts. That's and they right. just start falling on people. And everyone's yeah. like, we don't care. Yeah. People go nuts for the t-shirts, baby.
They do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, is there, what would it take for you, Brendan Halloran, to yell at the GM of your preferred sport? So let's say, Masai. Let's say Masai is there and the Raptors are in a rough spot and you know, and you've been very unhappy with them. Let's say what does it take for you to actually yell something at him?
First of all, I would never yell at Masai. No. I just would never do it.
Yes.
Okay. So let's pick. I don't.
One of our older ones. Like,
I don't want to say Rob Babcock because he's passed away, and I will not speak ill of the dead. yeah, I don't know. Glenn Grunwald is okay, there.
Glenn Grunwald.
Yeah, and he's and it's just not going well. What's it going to take? It's going to take 6 to 8 beers, a dismal performance. And then it's also going to take, I have an eye line on an exit. I can get out of there if I need to, because I don't like confrontation. I'm not interested in starting any sort of fights, but if I could just be like, yo, fuck you and run away.
That's what you're going to yell to.
Yeah. Well, I'm
just
going
to yell, yo, fuck you.
Yo, fuck you.
He's going to like barely hear it and be like, that person's probably not yelling at me.
Yeah.
You know, and just go back to his business.
No, because if it was Babcock, it'd be like, how do you like this deal? How do you like this deal for Vince Carter? It's Stu Williams and Alonzo Mourning. And it's just like, well, he's not going to play. It's like, well, you just went and started for the Heat last night.
See, this is great. This is what, so you
and
did.
I would yell like this, like a Jack Armstrong. Like, oh, yeah. What are you doing? Get the garbage out of here. You're in the garbage.
That's what I think it would take is the is like some incredible level of ineptitude from the GM, because you are not a very I'm going to yell at this player or I'm going to yell at this GM type of person or yell at a coach or something. Yeah. So to get you up there, it's got to be a combination of the beers, the exit, and then like some incredibly bad moves, like really, really bad. Like they got to be over the top, right?
Yeah, because it's so easy to like fall into less of an anger thing and more of just a general despair of just like, you know, where you just be like, oh, this sucks. Like you want to lay back and go like, this sucks, as opposed to an anger thing, which is like much more upfront and present where you're just like, I'm going to go scream at that person. What would it take for you? How do you,
not much,
not much.
A couple people around me who I think I can maybe, if I can get them laughing.
So you're doing it as a bit. You're playing to the crowd.
I'm mostly doing it as a bit. When I was a kid, I was way more into yelling, though, at like sports stuff. But now I'm not so much. One time I yelled at Bo Jackson. He was on first base. I was in the 100s. And it was just me and my friend. So like no parents. We got these sweet tickets. And I yelled at Bo Jackson. I said, Bo knows diarrhea. And he turned around and looked at me. And I have never sat down so quickly in my life. Just the stare of a Bo Jackson just being like, what the fuck, you know, really sat me down quite quickly. And I don't have any reason to believe that would be any different. I would yell at whoever it was. And then if they ever turned to look at me, I'd sit down and pretend it wasn't me. A true coward, because yeah. I don't want to be kicked out. I probably paid a lot for these seats, you know.
That's the thing about comedians. We're true cowards.
Exactly. Every single one.
Yeah, we get great comebacks, but if you challenge us at all, we're out.
Absolutely not. No, thank
oh,
you.
No, thank you. No. Oh, no. Oh, wait, you can see me?
Sorry, I thought
oh,
we no. were only saying things, you know?
Yeah.
And also, don't say anything too mean to me. Bye. You know, that's it. Yeah, okay. Okay, what do we think about this? Also looking around the league here. Perennial newsmaker, Rudy Gobert. gets fined $100,000, the league maximum, for making the money symbol, like the classic rubbing your fingers together, money symbol at a referee. And then also, it's for the gesture apparently, but in after the game, during the press conference, he was asked about it, and you know, I think like, I don't know, most players would probably be like, oh, you know, whatever, hey, that was a mistake, I'm sorry, you know, whatever. They just say what they have to say, right? Obviously, if you get heated, you might get heated, you might try and say something else, but I think for the most part, people just want to leave it as what it was. Not our boy Rudy Gobert. He doubles down, triples down, and is just like, I think it's a big problem. He's like, refs are gambling and it's really bad. He's like, he fully went for it. No, there's no arguing as to what the money symbol meant, because that's the thing. You get at least a plausible deniability if you don't speak on it past that with the league. But yeah, I'm guessing, you know, the league, they saw this, and Joe Dumars decided to really make an example of our boy Rudy Gobert, and it's a $100K fine for making a gesture. Which, okay, let's get your thoughts on that. What do you think about that as far as a player fine, as far as the league doing that? Is it an overreaction to give that much of a fine just for a simple gesture? Or do you think it like really truly undermines, you know, the league here?
No, I understand it from the league's perspective entirely. I don't think it's a simple gesture. I think that there's still a lot of residual damage that was done by the Tim Donaghy scandal. I think it's something that is still in the minds of a lot of people who watch basketball. I think that the league has to come out in the most strongest terms and say absolutely not. But is Rudy Gobert blowing a whistle here? Does he know for sure? Because, like, we can sit here and just be like, well, of course the league has figured it out, but they have not figured it out in the past. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to go conspiracy theory on this, but is Rudy Gobert just like, if he is saying unequivocally after the game, after the heat of the moment, the refs are betting on basketball and it's a problem, and we're just sort of going like, fine him. Like, yeah, wait a minute. Should this not be looked into a little bit? Should this not be given any sort of credence? Is it because Rudy Gobert touched all those microphones back in the early, literally yeah, 4 years ago, 4 years ago, like this week? Yeah. Is it because of that he doesn't have a lot of like, capital to to say something like this? But like, I would think if a top player on a top three team in the NBA says the refs are betting on these games and it's a problem, that's actually the story more so than the fine.
Okay, so you've brought up a great point here. Can we trust Rudy Gobert and his whistleblower's credibility here?
Yeah.
And he has been on record saying that he does think the NBA has a bias towards big market teams. He thinks that there is a full-on conspiracy to inflate the records of the larger markets and hinder the smaller markets.
Rudy Gobert, welcome to the Toronto Raptors, pal. I couldn't agree. I could not agree more with you.
Which, like, I think I don't think it's a full-on conspiracy. I think that makes no sense overall, that particular take, because why would they want to diminish the happenings of the lower, like, they need those teams to do well sometimes. But I do think that there is stuff going on with the refs when it comes to, you know, gambling and stuff. I think allegedly, you know, I don't want to get sued. I don't know for sure, but it feels like that could be a real thing. The piece I read, there's a piece in The Athletic about it where it was like, there are rumblings around the league, you know, credible or not, who knows, but there are rumors that this is a thing, that this is something that's happening, that there are certain referees who players think are gambling and then that's affecting their calls. I don't know. I feel like I'm always in on the, yeah, screw the refs are screwing us, it's unfair. And then when you take some time to examine it, it doesn't always, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's because they're being too protected. I don't know. What a tough spot to be in.
I mean, you know, we talked about it at the top. Sports gambling is so pervasive across the league. So the league really has no one to blame but themselves in this matter, because they went and they took all the money, right? They took all of this money from all of these companies. They embedded it into, you know, their business now. They are in the business of sports betting. So it's very difficult for them to now go like, yep, and our game is like, it's just, you can't maintain the line of just like, yes, we are very much on the level, and also we are very much involved with sports betting. It's really hard to make those two different distinctions. And I think that it's going to become more of a problem going forward than less of one. I don't think we're going to figure it out. I think the waters are going to get way more muddied, and we're going to have to start, you know, questioning, not have to, we'll get to a point where we are going to question the legitimacy of some of this stuff because of the amount of sports gambling that is now involved in every aspect of the league, and multiple leagues, like every league is doing this.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just the NBA, of course, it's everywhere. That's an interesting thing to think about. It does this affect the credibility, like as sports gambling gets, you know, even more so ingrained in these the cultures of these sports, because we're just starting to with all of this, right? It's everywhere, obviously, but it's only, you know, as years go on, I can't imagine it's, well, maybe not as many sports gambling places will exist. It's still, I think the like being ingrained into the culture is probably just going to get worse. So does that affect the credibility of the whole sport? Like, is that going to be a thing? I never really thought of it that way. But it is something to think about. I wonder, I wonder if how that works for the average person.
Yeah, because before with sports betting, the way that it would get really crooked is that, for the most part, the players who were beginning to get paid off, it was all happening in the lower leagues of soccer, where the players are not making that much. So you giving them X amount of dollars would buy them and would actually have them throw these games. And so when sports betting was super illegal, that's the way that they were doing it. But now, and it was always thought that the big professional, like the highest paid leagues in the world are immune to this, because you cannot pay LeBron James enough money to throw a game. He makes too much money. He can't be bought. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, what, $1 million? What does he care about $1 million? All of these people make too much money. There's too much money involved to actually throw these games. But now you don't have to do that. You don't have to go like CD, I'm going to try to sprinkle some money on somebody to do something that I want. There are legitimate corporate ways to receive this money. You can have your own sports book. I think LeBron does. He's entangled with, he has a contract with somebody, right, for some sort of promotional type stuff. Like, there are now legitimate ways to engage with the sports betting, and it might start affecting the product, because you can move lines by saying stuff. You can, I'm not saying that any players are sitting there trimming points off of the games and stuff, but it all becomes muddy, and you start thinking about every single aspect of this and how it intertwines and how the business works. And I think that the money becomes too much. Like, it's just great to make money. It's great to make money.
Yeah. Interesting. Of course, on FanDuel though. FanDuel, wonderful organization, full of wonderful.
We people. Are talking, no problem with legalized proper sports betting through the authentic channels. Making sure you're doing it above board.
That's right. Which is what we all want. We love the sports betting. We just want it to be above board. Yeah. Okay. Cool. You brought this up, Brendo. Just looking at the playoff picture here in the NBA. You brought up a very fun thing. Is that if the playoffs happen today, the play-in for the Western Conference is pretty wild as to what that the play-in tournament looks like. It's the Kings, the Mavericks, the Lakers, and the Warriors. We're looking at a pretty star-studded play-in here, with some of the best players in the game, which is wild.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sacramento could move up and the Suns could move down, and if so, then the Suns are all of a sudden in the playoffs. Yes, or in the play-ins.
Insane.
And I think that originally conceived, the play-ins were going to be like, hey, let's make the bottom half of, let's make the 7-8 teams that you don't really consider very much, that typically get like ousted in 4 or 5 games in the first round. Let's build around that. Let's inject some more competition into it. Let's inject some more excitement into it. And I think what's really wild to see happen is that it almost feels like new Hollywood, old Hollywood. style in this, because if you look at the Western Conference standings, these are the, you know, it's Denver, Oklahoma, Minnesota. These are the newer teams.
Yeah. That's your June 2.
That's your listen, those are, that's like, George Chalamet. Clooney.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Or no, sorry.
This is Timothy Chalamet. This is Zendaya. This is
Austin Butler.
Yeah. Exactly.
New Hollywood. And then you look at the play-in games, and a lot of it is old Hollywood. A lot of it is it's your LeBrons. It's possibly your
Harrison
KDs.
Ford.
Yeah,
going at it with Meryl Streep.
Yeah, totally. And I think that this is great. I think that this is great for the playoffs. I think this is great for the play-in. I like that there are like new stars and old stars, and we're going to see the old stars battle it out first to see who's going to take on the new stars. I think it's in the West specifically, not so much in the East. In the East, I'm not as interested in it. I think it plays out a little bit more as it has traditionally played out recently.
Yeah.
Although, you know, like Lakers have been involved in the play-ins, and the Golden State Warriors have been involved in the play-ins. But I feel like those teams have a little bit higher expectations than they did the years that they were in those play-ins. And someone can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure there'll be some comment about it if I'm wrong. That's fine.
The East, by the way, is Pacers, Heat, Bulls, Hawks. So yeah, not quite as enticing, exciting.
Snooze alert.
yeah. But yeah, that is. I mean, do you like the play-in? Are you a big fan?
I am a fan. This is a double elimination, but you know, for some people, it is single essentially. So like, yes, I am a fan of the play-in. I am a fan of any sort of game that matters, even if we have to, you know, artificially create the stakes like the play-in tournament, or actually have real stakes of making the playoffs. And I think it's done exactly what it's meant to do, which is keep teams in the hunt longer. And and all you need is one team to go on a run from that. So like the Miami Heat go from a play-in team to being in the finals, and everyone sees that can be done. So it makes these play-in games even more exciting. So I am absolutely a fan of the play-in games, except when it was like the Raptors a couple years ago, or last year. Was it last year? Were we in the play-in game last year?
We missed it by one.
We missed it, right. But the year before that we were.
Yeah.
And not so much when we're in it.
I didn't love it then. I guess the common argument against it is that it diminishes the regular season to some degree. But I disagree with that entirely.
I think it doesn't diminish the regular season whatsoever. I think if you're in the seventh spot, that you shouldn't be guaranteed a playoff spot. I think that it makes the regular season, you have to fight to get into the top six to not have to do this. I think that makes the whole season more valuable. It makes random games more important because you're trying to get to that sixth seed and not have to do the play-in. And then your seeding is like, you know, if you're a seven seed, you only got to win once. But if you're at 9-10, you got to win twice. Yeah. And that makes a total amount of sense to me. I think it really values where you end up in the standings. I think it encourages teams to play harder, and it also decourages that's not a word.
Discourages
tanking in a meaningful way. I think teams do play stick in it longer to get to the play-in games.
That's true. Speaking of no tanking, we talked about this a little bit on the weekend. And the PWHL has said that's the Professional Women's Hockey League, in case anyone's wondering. They're doing a thing where to avoid tanking, they are creating essentially what is a like an in-season tournament style thing, but it's for to win the draft. So they take, I think it's the bottom four teams, I want to say, and then they put their records up against each other at the end of the season, and whoever did the best in that sort of play-in style, like round robin, I'm supposing, thing, is they get the draft pick. So it discourages taking. Do you like this kind of thing for other leagues? Do you think that this is necessary? I think it's very interesting.
Right. So to be clear, like they stop. So like at this, just at the 65 game, like.
So as I understand it, I could be mistaken. Go ahead. Sorry.
They stop, and then it's that record. They take that record from that time, and then they go into a tournament. Is that how it works?
As I understood it, it's just a record against those other teams.
Oh, okay.
That's the way I understood it, anyways, as it was explained to me. But at any rate, you know, whether you would tweak it for a different league. I don't see anyone adding games for this. Like, I don't see this being a play-in thing where we add games at the end of the season. Although, I would be up for that personally. I think that'd be interesting to watch. Just a bracket of four teams, and whoever wins gets the, you know, it's three games, right? And then the winner gets the number one overall draft pick, which, you know, I mean, I think that's cool. There is a part of me though that's like, if you're that like second or third, or even if you're that worst place team, you're absolutely the worst team in the league. And now I gotta start winning to get my draft pick. Like I'm in bad shape here, you know. Like, isn't the whole thing of the draft to reward this bad team? Like, is there a danger that something like that could be counterintuitive? Really?
Yeah, I think that the draft is variable enough that. Yeah, you want to get the number one pick because typically there is a consensus number one, mm-hmm. but like, I still think that you can improve your, like, if you were going to do this with just the bottom four teams, say, so the four last place teams, have some sort of play-in tournament or something against each other, or we stop it at 65 games and then it's your record from 65 to 82. Then the highest scoring, like the team with the most amount of wins gets the number one pick after that point, whatever sort of like metric you want to put on it. I think that the draft has enough variability that, you know, you're not going to necessarily nail a number two pick. Like, we picked Scotty at five, and I bet there are some teams ahead to them that would prefer to have him than who they picked. I think that, you know, the notion that we just the worst team needs to get the best pick is an outdated notion. I think that, you know, if you draft in a savvy manner, then we don't need to do it that way, because like sometimes the seventh pick becomes the best pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. There's enough variability that way that I think that you could make the argument that, that you don't automatically get, which we already do. We just do it with lottery balls instead of actual play. I personally would love to go to a relegation system. I love it. I think it's a really cool idea. It'll never happen in a million years. No. There's too much money to be lost, but I think it's like, I think it's a perfect system.
I don't think so. I disagree. I hate it.
Oh, okay.
Freddie and I have talked about it before on the show, but yeah, the whole relegation thing is like, I just think it buries teams and just makes it like impossible for them to ever really recover from it. I think when you get down, I mean, you've seen it tons in the Premier League, like teams drop down one thing, they're out for the next 50 years or something, and it's just like they can't
not necessarily, like, they can come back. I mean, the soccer comparison is not really great because the teams do come back because some billionaire buys them,
but that's the thing, it all
an incredible amount of money
to have Ryan Reynolds buy your team and mm-hmm. and make a TV show about it, and, you know, just buy every, you know, good player around.
Again, it'll never happen, so we don't even need to worry about it. But no, like, I like the thought experiment of like the G League Ignite are just in the NBA next year.
Yes.
And the Detroit Pistons, hey, we'll see you when you win when you win the G League, which they probably will because they have NBA players. They'll probably be back up.
That's true. Okay, well, you know, I love ending it on a G League Ignite reference. We love the G League. But that'll do it. That's it for us. Another week here with the Raptors. You know, is anything happening? Anything going on we want to tell people about?
No, I don't think so.
Not much happening. Okay, I don't know. I can't speak for you, but I'm going to be at Comic-Con, Toronto Comic-Con.
I am going to be at Comic-Con now.
You are going to be at Comic-Con? Okay, great. Which is the weekend of...
It's Saturday.
It's this Saturday.
It's this Saturday.
Okay, amazing. I thought it might have been the next week, but yeah. So this Saturday being the 16th of March, at Comic-Con, you're going to be able to see myself, Brendo here. There's going to be a big Star Wars comedy show. There's dark side, light side. If anybody is coming to Comic-Con or feels like watching that sort of thing, if you're a Star Wars nerd like us, as a basketball nerd like us, then come on through, man. Come see a show. Yeah, it's at Comic-Con.
Yeah, if you want us to do some Star Wars chat on the old podcast too, leave a comment. At the end, we'll dedicate 5 minutes to some Star Wars chat at the end.
We can expand. We can stretch it out. We can make it work.
Totally.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then we'll see everybody next week otherwise. And hey, let's go.
Hey, let's get it. Let's go.